Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Head and do the interview.
Rockin'!
So, Derek J. Freeman, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you today, Michael W. Dean?
I'm good. This is the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, and today's guest is Derek J. Freeman. You know, the other day I got an email. I looked at my email box, and there were three emails. One was from Derek J. Freeman, one was from Ron Freeman, and one was from Ian Freeman. It was like there were so many free men out there. I couldn't keep up, man.
This is a good sign.
Yeah.
The world is turning in a good direction.
Yeah. I haven't changed my name because I really like my name. It's a powerful name. Michael means one who rules over 10, which probably isn't a great libertarian name, but I've always liked
it. Wow.
And no. Michael means a gift from God, and Dean means one who rules over 10. It's from the same word that decimal is from, and decimate.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah.
Always learning something new on this podcast.
Yeah, man. So tell me about your movie. I really want to say one thing, though. Coolest entrance ever at a premiere. It's like you arrive on the red carpet in New Hampshire there in a police car, and then you get out and you're like Liza Minnelli, but you're getting out of a police car, man. It was great.
Yeah, that was a really unique thing that happened that people can check out if they buy the movie themselves over at order.victimlesscrimespree.com. So, yeah, the movie Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree, now on DVD. You yourself have seen a copy of it, and that's what you're referencing there, the bonus features.
Yeah, there's a lot of good
Q&A.
So much bonus features, man. I couldn't keep up. There's hundreds of thousands of hours of bonus features on that, I think.
Yeah, it'll keep you entertained for a long time. And so I'm very excited that the movie is now accessible to people. I'm excited that we've had the sales that we've had and that people are going to be able to spread this to their friends. We've also, as per your recommendation on the last time I was on with the Fiends and the Anarchy, I wasn't for Anarchy Gumbo.
It's all the Fiends Empire, man.
But one of your last brilliant ideas was to have someone transcript the movie, and
transcribe.
Someone has volunteered. Right. Okay,
excellent.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Yeah,
so then you can get
volunteered to do that.
So then other people can make subtitles from that and put out subtitled versions of it.
Right. So everything's moving in a good direction, spreading the word of peaceful resistance and encouraging more peaceful resistance in the good people of the world.
That was not, by the way, my last good idea. That was a good idea I had about 2 years ago. I just shared it with you recently. My last good idea was about 10 minutes ago, and I don't even remember what it was. I wrote it down and did something with it. But, here's what I want to talk. I want to talk a little bit about the movie, but I really want to talk about your process as an activist and as an artist, because there need to be more people doing it as well as you are. And I want to talk about how you do it. That's what the bulk of this cast is going to be. You know, a lot of shows, a lot of times somebody has a new movie out or a new book or something, and the Liberty media ends up imitating the worst aspects of the mainstream media. Like, you know, you go on some show, some podcast, some radio show, Liberty thing, and it's like, it might as well be The Tonight Show. It's like, well, tonight our guest is Derek J. Freeman. Tell us about your new movie, you know? And like, you know, people never go on The Tonight Show or The Daily Show or, you know, Conan unless they have something to pimp.
They're always pimping something.
And so I'm going to let you pimp it a little bit, but then I really want to get in your head and talk about how people can do what you're doing and actual techniques and methodologies and how you keep sane and keep focused and don't get crushed by the tyranny and all that. But
but
before we get there, I have one suggestion. You know how they teach little kids to not get molested, they say, you know, yell bad touch and then like run to another adult. I think the next time you get arrested, you should yell bad touch.
No.
Seriously.
That's perfect that you've already thought of that, because actually that was something that I had considered after the Live Free or Dance arrest was saying, stranger, danger, because that's what I was taught. If there's a stranger who's trying to kidnap you, that you're supposed to say, stranger, danger, you're not my mommy, you're not my daddy.
You're not my daddy. That's that, but you got to put in there, bad touch, because that's so disorienting. It's like, ugh, what does that mean? Wait, he thinks I'm... Oh my God. People are filming this.
Oh, it would be great. Oh, I think that would be some brilliant footage. And, you know, I'm on a hiatus from my crime spree right now. I can't perform any civil disobedience, but if there's anyone else out there who's listening and has the opportunity, beat me to it, please, because that would be great to watch.
Although I think you doing it would be really special.
Well, thanks. That sounds like fun.
It is.
Well, I'm honored and I'm flattered that you would say that I've done this civil disobedience well. There are many who would argue with you, but you know, for what it's worth, I hope that people will check out the movie and give me a fair critique. You know, I've learned a lot from the liberty activists who have critiqued my film and my activism, and I think it always, you know, makes people better at what they do, and I want to be better, so that's all good.
To be clear, I mean, you do have your detractors, but they're mostly statists who libertarians who think that you know, all they need to do is forward things on Twitter and Facebook and that's activism. But to me, somebody doing activism well, basically what that means is they're doing something I like and getting attention for it, and you're doing that.
Well, thanks. I like this too. You know, I saw and was inspired by the individuals who were asserting their own self-authority over in Keene. Before I had performed the crime spree, when I was just a Philly boy looking at, you know, no job prospects at the time. You know, I had just quit my job as a fundraiser for the ACLU and for Greenpeace, and I wasn't seeing any of those things go anywhere.
Was that before you became a libertarian or an anarcho-capitalist?
No, I mean, I was...
Because those are organizations that a lot of, you know, libertarians, especially any that lean conservative, whatever that is, hate. But I like the ACLU. I mean, they don't take up much gun stuff or any gun stuff, but I think they fight a good fight. I think they fight things that are unconstitutional, and I don't believe in the Constitution, but it is the law of the land, and it's, you know, it's the only, like, thin, breakable condom covering us from the disease that is government. So, you know, good for them.
Gosh. Right. Well, so I am a strong proponent for civil liberties and always have been. I was not an anarcho-capitalist at the time when I took the job. Certainly by the time I left, I was leaning pretty strongly that way. And it was because of those issues. I mean, I was spat on, and I was, you know, I was told that I worked for the Anti-Christian Liberal Union, and that, you know, a lot of these people have a lot of misconceptions about what the ACLU does. They said I was a KKK supporter, and, you know,
to be clear, the ACLU once did something kind of mind blowing about 15 or 20 years ago. They had a bunch of Jewish lawyers defend a bunch of neo-Nazis' right to free speech and free assembly.
Right.
And to me, that's really an incredible, like, walking your talk. They haven't done anything like that since then, but that's probably where the KKK thing comes from.
Is, and that is inspiring to me. You know, that's what I wanted to see when I was working with them. And I raised a lot of money for that group. I won't get into numbers, but I was really proud of myself and the work that I did. But then I didn't see any results, and I was pretty upset about that, because I was seeing the ACLU was trying to hold the government accountable to its own standard. And I realized that was never really going to happen, that the government was never going to be held accountable. And so it wasn't really worth my time and energy directing my talents towards supporting that group.
Yeah.
I needed to do something else.
How did you come to liberty?
You know, we all come through, I guess, different wild ways. The simplest answer, I guess I could say, is through YouTube. Just, you know, having a lot of free time. Making free time to watch videos on YouTube to self-educate. I had been kicked out of college because of well, a lot of reasons. I was kicked out. You know, I was told I wasn't allowed on the any residential parts of the campus anymore because I had expressed some comfortable ideas about guns, and I went to school in Massachusetts, and that was just I was really ostracized by the staff after that, and so you know that shook me up. That made me feel like you know, what's going on in this world where a person can be you know, brought into a mental hospital as I was without my consent and held there for 16 days, which is how long it took for me to be able to get a lawyer and a judge to come to the hospital and get me out. Because I'm not crazy. Like, you know, I may have some unpopular perspectives, but I'm not actually crazy. And so I needed to be able to get out of that. Uh-huh. And that set me off on being like, well, how can this happen? How is this possible? Because, you know, it didn't fit with my worldview. And so that led me on the path of figuring out, you know, oh, well, the government thinks it owns people and, you know, that they can just take your body away and put it where they want. Well, that didn't jive with me. And so I had to fix it.
Interesting. So
yeah, does that make
it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. I like what you're doing, and some people don't. A lot of people love it, and I think it's doing a lot of good, but let's talk about the detractors, the haters. You get some comments on YouTube that would make most people, like, not be able to sleep, and, you know, you get, like, 10 of them a day, and one of them would make most people not sleep for a week. What do you think of those, and what's up with those people?
Well, thanks for asking. I'm really proud of, you know, the ruckus that I cause, and it's true that I get far more detractors than I do supporters, and I think that's fine. That's actually probably a pretty healthy reflection of where the world's at right now, and I'm okay with that because I can persistently every day put out 5 minutes of beautiful, positive, encouraging material that really speaks to the couple of percent who gets the message and is going to spread it among other people who matter. You know, which are the people who are actually going to do something to advance liberty. So I don't care what the mean people say. You know, that's a reflection of what's inside of them. Has nothing to do with me. And when I worked at Greenpeace, we had a phrase that we would communicate with each other, you know, when we could tell that the other was having a rough day. And it was just to put a hand over by our ear and to do a Q-tip motion. And that stood for Q-tip, which is taking it personally. And I always remembered that. It was some of the best advice that I got in sales, and it's the best advice that I've got now that I'm, you know, doing YouTube videos. It's just don't take it personally. All the trash that people throw at me, that's about them. It's not about me.
Why a Q-tip?
Because it stands for quit taking it personally.
Ah, I thought it was cleaning the crap out of your ears that they put in there.
Works both ways.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, we were trying to find ways to communicate with each other when you're across the street. Because I worked on the streets of Philly, and so my coworkers were, like, you know, maybe 50 feet away. So you needed to be able to see them.
I guess when I say I think you're really successful at what you do, you know, you're reaching a lot of people. You're doing it in a different and amusing way, you know, that kind of makes fun of the beast of the state. And especially the long arm of it, which is the law, the part of the state. You know, it's like, what congressmen do doesn't really directly affect me as much as, like, what the cop in my town does to me, you know? And yeah. And so the reason I think you've been really successful, and I say you're really successful, is in a very short period of time, you've gone from nobody's heard of this guy to everyone's heard of this guy. How long did that take? Like, when you were filming in Philadelphia, you said you only had a couple friends helping you out with it and you weren't a name doing it. How long ago was that?
Well, that's a good question. So the first time when I did something of any import, in my opinion, was when I was kicked out of a Obama rally in Philadelphia by Secret Service. And that was 10-10-10, a historic day for me. That it was, you know, the 10th month of the and the 10th day of the 2010, and Obama was speaking here in Philadelphia, and a group of my friends and I went to attend with some signs, and while we were walking towards the event, we were being told by multiple staff we weren't allowed to have signs. I'm like, this is crazy. What are you talking about? First Amendment, I've always seen signs in pictures of rallies with the president. There are always signs there. What are you talking about? But no, it was true. You know, we stood our ground as long as we could. But it really frustrated me because, you know, I was intimidated by the Secret Service and my friends were intimidated. We went out and got pizza. You know, we weren't allowed to go to the event. We made lemonade. And then, but it still hurt me inside knowing that I had walked away. I had backed down from a situation instead of asserting my rights. And I knew that if I was with others who think like I do, that I would have the strength and the support to actually stand on principle. And that's what made moving to Keene and New Hampshire so attractive.
Nice. Where are you living now?
Right now, I'm back in Philadelphia, taking my hiatus, what I'm calling an exile tour from the Shire. I've made Philadelphia my home base, and I'll be able to travel to different parts of the continent to highlight different activism that's happening around. One of the things I'd like to cover coming up, and I'm not sure if I'll be able to make it, is Vernon Hershberger's trial over in Wisconsin. I'm looking to be able to travel out that way and support him for his civil disobedience. And I want to support others who do, you know, cool things that I think are pretty cool, resisting authority.
Resisting authority. Did you, what were you like as a kid? Did you get branded as a anti-authoritarian, or were you yes, Mr. Teacher, Mrs. Teacher? What were you like?
I don't know. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to say exactly. You know, I guess I could make up any story and you would have to believe it because you don't really know.
No, I mean, that's the point of an interview. I mean, you could just lie about everything in your past. Anybody could. And I'm assuming that you're an ethical person and won't. Although, you know, I don't think embellishing a little bit is unethical. And I sort of do it when I tell my life story. But, you know, I say that I had sex with, you know, 40 men, 900 women, and a dog. It's more like 175 women, 4 men, and I petted a dog and looked at it in a strange way.
Oh, well, I just, you know, I preface that statement because, and I ask about that because I don't have the best memory of my childhood, to be honest, and it wasn't that long ago, but I really don't remember it that well, and I don't know why that is, but my memory is very short for some things, and certainly my childhood is one of them. I wouldn't say that I was an outcast. I wouldn't say that I was popular. I was more intelligent than my peers. In eighth grade, one of my memories was sweeping the academic awards, and that was kind of embarrassing that like I kept getting called up. Another thing is that I hated school. Despite being, you know, the top in my class, I hated going and walking through the doors of the entrance to the school just filled my stomach with dread every day. And it wasn't because I was bullied. You know, maybe I felt intimidated about what clothes I wore or what I looked like. You know, in high school, I wore really tight, skinny girl jeans and black makeup.
You still do sometimes, like, don't you?
Well, yeah, but I mean, this was like scene kid style. You know, this is what people who are really depressed in high school like to dress as, you know.
Were you a goth?
Black.
Were you goth? Were you into goth music?
No, it's a different genre from goth. I think it's,
I know,
like
what Club Kids is, but yeah, it's like mindless drug dance music.
Yeah. So I was sort of in that crowd, and that's, I don't know. I guess that's sort of where I drifted. I ended up going to Brandeis University, which is a pretty good school. I'd say it's not like, it's not Ivy League, but it's close to the Ivy League. And anyway, that's, but getting kicked out, you know, that doesn't win many awards. But, you know, when I did go to the school, I wasn't kicked out for any academic reasons. I did pretty well there too. And, I still, you know, I had a good circle of friends, but I was never very popular. I guess guess you could say that. Does that kind of answer your question? Give you sort of a picture of what I was like?
Yeah.
I was in AP classes, like took a lot of really smart classes, and I didn't sleep in high school. I remember that. One of the reasons I hated school was because every waking minute was consumed by performing for these teachers. You know, when you take all AP classes and you even take an extra class at the beginning of the day before school starts for everyone else, which I did, called a zero mod, you know, I was starting my day at 6:50 in the morning with AP chemistry. It's just not a pleasant experience. And I was lied to, told that I had to do these things because I had to get into a good college because that was going to determine whether or not I was going to be successful in life. The lie was that my performance mattered in any of these respects. Being kicked out of college. And I like to think that I'm more successful now than I would have been if I had stayed in.
Worms. Let's go sell some things here and we'll be right back. On the Gumbo.
Did your world collapse when Ron Paul didn't win? Don't keep hoping for some great man to fix government through government. Complete your evolution today to full-on anarcho-capitalist. Reward your brain with the freedom fiends and quit breaking your heart with some politician. While the libertarians argue,
but who would build the roads?
The freedom fiends have already built the roads and moved on to making the great media content of the libertarian paradise. Freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Want to contribute to liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes. Follow twitter.com/fiendtorrents to grab the past episodes and new ones as they post. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents, while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding the fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. That's twitter.com/fiendtorrents.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
Welcome back to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, and we're talking here with Derek J. And the next 40 minutes of this hour, I just want you to talk about your process and how people can replicate your success in their own activism or in their own business or whatever they want to do. Talk about what you do and how you do it and how you get people to help and motivate yourself and others and just make something out of nothing, you know?
Okay. Well, sure. There was a lot of trial and error in what I've accomplished so far, and putting it all on the record, you can go and check and see my mistakes for yourself and see what was successful and what wasn't. But just to summarize, I moved to Keene and I stayed pretty quiet and saw what was going on first, started analyzing what other people were doing and what sort of activism that I liked that was going on and what sort of things were lacking. And I teamed up with a couple of other people who were most active, some Jason Talley of Talley.tv, Ian Freeman, of course, of Free Talk Live, and J.J. Schlesinger, who was at that time producing a show called Free Keen TV, in which I participated as the show's switcher and also some other respects. But really, it was about finding where I could help and just filling in that spot. There's a lot to do when you're trying to figure out how to build the free future. And for me, a huge part of that is using the tools of propaganda that have been used against people to confuse them and bewilder them and make them submit to arbitrary authority. Use those same tools that have been used against people to help free them.
All activism is really just advertising, you know? I think you made a really good point about what some people would consider starting at the bottom. Like, you know, a lot of people have this kind of entitled attitude in life. I think that's something that's a lot more prevalent than it used to be. Part of it's from public schools, where they think, if I just dream it, I can be it. And to them, that means, you know, I'm going to will myself into being a rock star or a rap star or a clothing mogul or something. And they don't understand the idea of paying dues, which paying dues, you learn the ropes, to use two cliches that are based on a lot of truth. You know, you don't walk into a TV station and say, give me a show. You walk into a TV station and say, I'm willing to work for free and sweep floors and push buttons to help out, just to get some experience with it. And you learn a lot doing that. You learn a lot of technical stuff. I'm amazed at the number of radio people that don't know anything about the microphones they're speaking into. And people like me and Ian Freeman build our gear from the ground up and know everything about it and know how to fix it at 4 a.m. when the guy who would normally help you isn't there. And for Ian and I, we are the guy that fixes stuff. And, you know, I'll even like call him at 4 a.m. and say, hey, the feed's down, and he'll wake up and he'll reboot it and it'll go back on. And he does that stuff for me. And people help each other out. And, you know, another thing with it is like doing things for people like that. You network, you get to know more people, and you also just kind of, you kind of earn your place, and you can advance really quickly in what your place is, from, you know, pushing the buttons on someone's TV show to being the star of a movie in 2 years or less, if you really are meant to do it and you do it right and you have a good heart. And I think that, a really good example is, you know, the guy Lemmy, you know, the band Motorhead.
Yeah.
Lemmy's first job in show business was being Jimi Hendrix's roadie. How cool is that?
That's not bad.
You know,
so what, they carry equipment and stuff for
Yeah,
him, so.
Yeah, tune guitars, you know, carry equipment, tune stuff, you know, make sure all the equipment's working, fix it when it's not. I mean, that's how he started out. And he has said in interviews that, you know, that was like a college education, like a doctorate level college education in rock and roll, carrying Jimi Hendrix's guitars and just seeing him in action up close for a year or two.
Yeah, absolutely. So these projects like TV and radio always fascinated me and seemed well outside of my reach before I ever went to college, and probably even right after I left college. It didn't seem like any of these would be within the realm of possibility for me. But just going and trying it myself and inserting myself into useful places made it all possible. So, you know, I encourage people who are looking to get involved in media or activism of any kind, really just try a lot of different things with people who are already doing some activism, see where your passions are, and exploit the heck out of them. Because I worked all the time. I was always, always, always working on something liberty activism related. And that was one of the joys of living at the Keene Activism Center. For many months, I lived right at the epicenter of libertarian activism in Keene, New Hampshire. And that was really an exciting opportunity, because at all hours, there was always something that could be done, writing a blog post or helping someone on a video, learning to edit a video, or making a podcast. So these are experiences for which I'm very grateful that I had the opportunity, grateful to the people of the Shire and the people who helped me get there too.
Yeah, and if people want to know where to start doing something like that, just find some liberty activist you like who's doing some kind of media or is doing on the street stuff or whatever, whether they're in your town or it's work over the internet, and just offer to work for free. Don't even say, hey, if you make $1 million, you'll owe me some. Like, that's nothing turns people off more than that, because they won't make $1 million. And people who have that kind of attitude, if they make $1,000 and you know, came in at the last minute and swept the floors for a week, people that say that are going to ask for a cut. Basically, contact anyone who's doing something like that. They all need help, man, because all of us are doing 24/7, wearing 10 different hats, being, you know, the board operator, the recording engineer, the editor, the cameraman, the writer, the, you know, PR guy who calls up the radio stations and tells them about it. And they can all use help. And if you're not a flaky person, they'll realize it quickly and give you more stuff to do. And until you know a lot, and you can go out and do it on your own.
That really is the key, I think, that you touched on, is being a responsible person, taking on more responsibility when it's possible, and being a worker. I think that you, in your experiences, you've seen flakes and you've seen people put their nose to the grind.
Yeah.
And something that I learned doing activism, because I always tended to be a person who took on as much as I could chew, you know, and more if I could. And so I gravitated and resonated with the people who were like me, the Ian Freemans and the J.J. Schlesingers, people who take on a lot of work and want to do big projects, a demo. These are all big doers. And my advice to people who want to achieve their wildest dreams but don't want to put in the effort is to give up. Give up right now, because it takes a lot of effort, an insane amount.
That's what Frank Zappa said about 40 years ago. Rolling Stone magazine in an interview said, "What advice do you have for aspiring musicians?" And he said, "I think they should all quit immediately." Which basically, I mean, really saying that, he was kind of joking, but he was kind of serious. I think what he meant by that was, if your hero, Frank Zappa, telling you to give up, makes you give up, then you're not meant to try to do it, and it'll save yourself and your family and your loved ones a lot of heartache.
That's right. Yeah, at certain points, even if you're doing a job, at least in my experience, when I'm doing a job that I love, there are still times when I hate it, when it's work, and when I have to say, you know, shut up, focus, and do your job. And that takes some practice. And if you're not willing to put in the effort, then it's not going to happen for you. So that's some honest advice to people. If you want to do successful activism or successful anything, you have to put in the effort. And it's not always going to be just a joy all the time. And I'm saying this from a place of, like, my work keeps me overjoyed all day, every day. But even today, there are times, you know, where I'm writing for Peace News Now and I'm like trying to find the right words or trying to find the right story, and I get frustrated and I could just give up. And then that would be the end of it. Because no one's going to just take over for you. No one's going to say, "Oh, you've just fallen here. Let me pick you up." You have to do that yourself. And, you know, that was a big learning experience for me, because when I started with Free Agents Radio News, that was the first incarnation of Peace News Now, a project that I work on currently, which is a 5-minute daily news show from a voluntarist perspective. I was trying to get people involved and trying to reach out to all different kinds of activists to contribute pieces of writing to the show. And a lot of people expressed interest on being on the show and in participating. But what people really wanted was for me to write words and for them to say them. And that's not actually doing anything. So that was a big learning experience, because I was constantly banging my head against the wall, doing way more work to include other people than it would have been to just do it myself. And now, I hope that doesn't sound cynical, because I really do have a good perspective of, people got to do what they're most interested in. They've got to do what they have an incentive to do. So I don't fault any of those people. Perhaps I didn't give them the right incentives.
I fault them.
Well, they're not going to accomplish anything.
Well, here's what I think. There's a lot of people working with other people on projects that don't make much or any money. I've done a lot of it even before I was an activist. I've made a lot of documentary films, and I was in a band and, you know, toured the world and slept on floors and got signed to Warner Brothers and got dropped and, you know, did a lot of stuff before I got into activism. By the time I get into activism, I was really good at all the technical aspects of it. So it just instantly transformed to, like, you know, a couple weeks after, a couple years after I became a minarchist, before I was even an anarchist, I was making the Guns and Weed film with Nima Vidati. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who've been into liberty longer than me, but they don't have the background I have to be able to just apply anything I want to media. So I had a good background with that. But my experience with dealing with people helping is, like, 8 or 9 out of 10 of them that say they want to help will cause you more problem than it's worth. And an example I love to give is when I was making a film, I was going to Park City to show it at one of those, like, little, you know, following on the coattails of Sundance, like someone will rent a room or a cafe and have a film festival at the same time as Sundance and hope someone will wander in from it. And I, you know, took money out of pocket to fly there. And I wanted to make flyers to hang up there and hand out. And I knew a guy who worked at Kinko's, and he said he could make them for me for free. And I said, I need him, you know, I'm leaving Thursday. I need him by like Tuesday. Can you get him to me by then? And he didn't. And he kept stalling. And finally he couldn't do it. And I had to, like, in Park City, go to a Kinko's and pay like three. They jack up the prices during Sundance. So it cost me three times what it would have cost me in L.A. to make these flyers because I was relying on a flaky person. I actually sent him a bill for it, kind of as a joke, but kind of that's just how I am. He didn't pay, and I didn't expect him to, but that was my lesson. And a lot of people, you have to get really good. If you're trying to get people to help you, you have to get really good at quickly seeing who's going to cost you time and who's going to save you time.
Yep, absolutely. So that was part of it.
But I don't want to discourage people who might help from trying to help people with that of like, oh, they're going to think I'm no good and they're going to fire me and I don't know, you know, try. If you really think you can contribute, try and be willing to do anything and help an activist. But don't waste their time, man, because it's worse than not even volunteering.
Yeah, I mean, sure. And there were times when I was more grief than I was worth, probably on Freakeen TV when I wired some cameras wrong or I put the batteries in wrong. You know, things happen like that are just to be expected when someone's new and not paid. So, you know, it goes both ways. But I would say at least the attempt is worth a lot. Showing that you actually are trying to help is worth a lot. But I don't want to just rag on people all day. I can tell them why don't I go through some of the ways I took some notes on being successful, some successful activism that I've participated in, and I'd like to share some. So first, record. Even if you're wrongly arrested, you'll still win because you got it on video. It keeps an objective record of what's happening, and I think that's really important. It spreads easily, especially with all of the platforms that people are able to use to share video. Now, video is the number one for shareable tools. And it's evidence.
Although I'm really into audio, but not for evidence. Video with audio is better for evidence. I can make video and have been doing it, digital video, longer than most people have. I'm doing it since like 1998, which most people didn't know there was a such thing then as consumer digital video. But there, you know, in a way, audio-only media is really, for media, not for evidence media, but for media, I really think audio is more consumable in a lot of ways. For one thing, it's the file sizes are much smaller. You can put it on a iPod or something like that. But the main thing about it is you can consume it while doing something else. Now, I'm such a good multitasker, I actually watch movies on one side of my screen while doing math and doing writing on the other side of the screen. But most people can't do that. And you certainly can't do it outside your house or driving or working or anything. But audio is really good for that, for like killing time and learning and having fun while you're, you know, washing dishes or riding to work on your bike.
It's true. And I'm not just talking about recording videos to be consumed by, you know, average users on a daily basis. I'm talking about
an event, that you need a witness of, and the camera's the witness.
Yeah, there is no excuse. With the accessibility and affordability of video cameras today, there is literally no excuse for any...
Think about the Rodney King thing and what a big deal that was. And it only was because it was the first time that somebody had filmed police brutality. Back then, you know, a video camera cost $1,000. Not a lot of people had them. And somebody happened to turn one on while that guy was getting beat up by the cops. And it kind of, I don't know if it changed the world, but it certainly, you think it did?
I'll tell you, it changed me because, you know, I was 5 when the Rodney King thing happened. And so, and you know, I got my education pretty much from YouTube after I was kicked out of college. And a lot of what I saw on YouTube was police brutality. And that is thanks to the person who captured the video of the Rodney King incident and the affordability of cameras. There's a whole generation, myself included and all the ones who come after me, who have been raised with easily accessible millions of police brutality videos. It's not a secret anymore. It's not just a something that can be explained away by more propaganda. The evidence is right there in front of you.
I know that changed the world. You're right. But the reason I said maybe changed the world was when that happened, a lot of the people yelling on the news about it, especially a lot of the black leaders, were yelling for a vigorous investigation of the LAPD. And we didn't get one. You know, I mean, look at what happened last week with Dorner. I mean, they killed a guy, and that was their due process, and got away with it, and shot some civilians in the process for no reason at all. You know, it didn't clean up the LAPD is what I'm saying, but it certainly shone a light on something that people who lived in bad neighborhoods knew happened. You know, I lived in bad neighborhoods. I was actually a heroin addict at the time in San Francisco. And the way that it affected me, this is really selfish, but it was really big to me at the time, was they declared martial law, and anybody driving was subject to getting pulled over at night. And my heroin dealer, who used to deliver, I'd page him and he'd come over to my house, wouldn't deliver. And I was dope sick for a couple nights because the dealers wouldn't come out because there was martial law. So that's how it affected me.
I'm sorry to hear that.
That I couldn't get my dope, or that I was a junkie?
No, that you couldn't get your dope.
I know, it's a drag, man.
Yeah, I don't like to hear, you know, people suffering.
The police always screw things up.
Yeah, well, so, okay, yeah. Well, filming the police is huge, and knowing what anyone who's listening to this podcast should know, there's a lot of danger in police interactions, and so you have no excuse not to have a camera. You must be carrying a camera on you. And that was a rule that I followed while living in Keene. And if I hadn't followed it, it wouldn't have been possible to create victimless crime spree. It's essential.
Absolutely.
So another successful activism that I engaged in while living in Keene was Don't Take the Plea Deal outreach. There's also FIJA outreach, the Fully Informed Jury Association. I think these are a really big deal. People can find their own flyers if they'd like to print out some of their own and participate in this themselves over at freekeen.com and also fija.org. That's FIJA.org.
And excellent.
Yeah, that's where you can pick up some of the resources for handing out leaflets to your friends, family, and strangers. I handed them out in the courthouse and city hall where people would walk in, victims of the police aggression would come in to their arraignments, and I would hand them a flyer saying, don't take the plea deal. You know, you'll be asked, would you like to plead guilty to this charge in exchange for a lesser sentence? It's always, that's what the government wants. They want your money, and they want your guilt. They want you to say, oh, I did wrong, and it won't happen again. Here's some of my money. And I say, don't give them that. Make them do their jobs and prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you actually have committed a crime. This can have a lot of different effects. One of them is that it makes more trials have to be scheduled. So that clogs up the courts, and they're already clogged up as it is all over. So this isn't just unique to Keene. All courthouses are backlogged, where if you commit a crime today, it's not likely you'll get a trial until a year from now. And so having them schedule more of these trials really extends the deadline on that and discourages more tickets of the same nature. So I encourage people to not take the plea deal, often for victimless crimes, crimes that, of course, involve no victims.
Yeah, like, I want to talk more when we come back from the sales pitches here about different levels of that and where I think it may not always be the best bet. But we're going to go sell some stuff here.
All right. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world? Stop using their money. There is an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless, free market, non-political currency. Bitcoin cannot be inflated or controlled by any government. By using their money, you are helping the state. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available now. Learn it, use it, spread it. Get started with Bitcoin at weusecoins.com. That's weusecoins.com. You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people.
So, Derek J.
Hey, Michael W. Dean.
Hey. I really like FIJA activism, fully informed jury activism, which, can you explain that briefly?
Sure. So, juries and people on them have inherent right, I would argue, and the legal ability to declare a law.
Hello?
No, void. Yeah.
Okay, you cut out for a sec.
Yeah, that, right. Okay, so people have a right and an ability to declare a law null and void in the situation facing the court. So not for everyone, but for that particular instance, the law can be waived. And for example, this just happened in New Hampshire with a man who was growing 15 marijuana plants, admitted to it openly, yes, they were there. There's no question I was growing these plants. And the jury actually unanimously freed him. They said that he was not guilty of the alleged crime of growing marijuana. But of course, he was growing marijuana. But the reason they said he was not guilty is so that he is freed. And in this particular situation, the law is null and void. And that's what I would like to see happen with more victimless crimes of the same nature.
Yeah, me too. Now, the other kind of activism, the never take a plea deal, I have reservations about that. I think that that is a good kind of activism with things like traffic tickets, minor misdemeanors. I feel a little differently with someone who's facing, you know, 15 to 20 years for a nonviolent crime, for a drug crime or a weapons crime where they shouldn't be, it shouldn't be a crime. But if the plea deal does not involve snitching and the plea deal is something like, you know, tell us what you did instead of making us take you to trial, and a good attorney is pretty who's on your side is convinced they have you dead to rights, I don't know that I think it's necessarily a good idea to say never take a plea deal, because chances are in that situation you're going to go to a jury trial, they're going to stack the jury the way they want, and you're going to end up in prison for 15 or 20 years when it could be like 6 or 8 years if you just kind of play ball, which a lot of people say I'm a pussy and I'm a statist for saying that, but that's probably what I would do in a situation like that. Or I don't even want to say what I'd do in a situation like that. Who knows till they're in it, and I don't want to put it out there of like what I would do, because I, you know, I don't want to reveal my hand. I don't even know what I'd do. But do you really believe never, never, never take a plea deal?
Well, I didn't say never take a plea.
That's the name of the organization, though, or one of them, isn't it?
There is an organization called Never Take a Plea, and nevertakeaplea.org is their website. Clyde Voluntarius is the man behind that one, and you know, I support what they're about. The message of never take a plea, obviously, Clyde still supports what I do, although I took a plea deal. And I handed out Don't Take the Plea Deal outreach. That was my first activism in Keene. So it really broke my heart when confronted with the reality that I was about to either have to prepare for 5 different trials from a jail cell or take a plea deal. Well, my options were pretty much, you know, my decision was made for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that and hear you say that you have taken a plea, just because I think it's a really toxic idea that's out there in liberty that is cemented in the phrase never take a plea. And there are people who are probably in prison or going to end up in prison for longer than they need to because that's cemented in their mind as an absolute.
Right. And people gave me criticism for doing that.
Well,
and
those people weren't facing what you faced. Unless they've faced what you faced, their criticism is null and void. And even if they have faced it, what they did is their decision. You know, I just think you put the Q-tip in your ear for that one.
Exactly. So no one who loves and supports me was saying nasty things about me taking the plea deal. Obviously, they understand it's a personal decision to make. And when I was facing 10 years in prison, I'm speaking to you today from my own apartment in Philadelphia. And I think that's a better place to be than in a prison cell.
Yeah,
I care a lot more for liberty here than I can there. And I understand it's a compromise of my principles to say that I was guilty of a crime that I don't believe is a crime. But it is true that I am guilty of everything that I was accused of. So, you know, people have to find it within their own hearts about whether or not they're going to act on Don't Take a Plea Deal. But I still think the outreach is very effective, because for a lot of people, they've been charged for the first time, or they're often the people I would reach out to were 18 years old and had been busted at a college party for drinking. And I like to see people in their first interaction with law enforcement and with the judicial system to say, no, you have to go through and do your job and find all the evidence that says that I'm guilty of a crime. I'm not going to just bow down.
That's actually one that a lot of people get out of, because they usually don't save the evidence in a liquor bust.
No, they rely on people taking the plea deal, and this isn't...
Yeah, and if it goes to a jury trial with, like, you know, cop's word against someone's word, and they don't have the bottles, and I've actually heard of people, like, demanding chemical tests of what's in the bottles. There's all sorts of ways to gum it up. Yeah, man.
And this doesn't just... applying to people who are walking into a courthouse. There are people handing out FIJA flyers and Don't Take the Plea Deal outreach at any public space. And also, there's a group of people in both a couple of places in New Hampshire. One of them is Manchester, where a group of people sends out into the mail individual flyers to victims of the state by looking their names up in a newspaper and mailing them information that may be helpful to them in their case.
Ah, that's good. That's good.
There's also some powerful activism to participate in. You know, I didn't mention, while I'm talking about ways to do successful activism, I forgot to mention one that I think is really big, which is to resist taxes by trading in an alternative currency. I regret that I've paid taxes once. That means that I am in the system and that my name is on file somewhere. For people who are about my age or maybe a little bit younger and you haven't paid taxes before, don't ever start, because then your name isn't on file and it's it doesn't raise any red flags. Like, why is there only 1 year where this person filed? And you can do that by trading in Bitcoin or gold, silver, or script, or whatever you want.
I'm going to put a Bitcoin ad right before this section.
That's a great idea.
Because we just recorded some for me, and my wife and I each did one. And I think you did the same text and did one, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, that was actually pulled from an ad that I do over on Peace News Now. So we're recycling that one a lot. And I think it's a powerful message, because Bitcoin, I truly believe it has the power to free humanity. And I know that sounds kind of like... Or fantasy, but
angels will bring us liberty. That's what it kind of sounds like to the uninitiated. And I don't know that I agree 100%. I don't agree with that, but I agree that it is one of many tools that could help.
Yeah, maybe that's a more moderate way of saying it, but I'm really excited about Bitcoin, because when you use the dollar, that is what gives the dollar power. You know, people always ask, well, the dollar's backed by nothing and it's worthless. No, it's not. If you think the dollar's worthless, I'll take your dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and people don't realize, at least I didn't realize for a long time, that the only thing giving the dollar any power is when I offer it to the man at the hot dog stand saying, here, will you take this in exchange for your hot dog? You know, that's what gives the dollar power, that people exchange it as a means of trading value. And when you stop doing that, then you've taken away its power. You don't need to end the Fed. You don't need to abolish or audit the Federal Reserve. all you need to do is take a look at your own life and see how you are trading value for value. And if you are using the money of the American empire, then you are supporting the empire.
I liked your, you changed your tone of voice near the end there, and it really sounded like an ad.
Thanks. Yeah, I feel very strongly about people trading in an alternative currency, because that's the emancipator.
So talk more about your movie. Walk us through how it came to be and the process of making it and distributing it for the last 15 minutes here. But don't just tell it like you're telling it on the Tonight Show. Explain why you did each thing and how other people can do the same kind of thing. Because you're right. You're not a filmmaker. I mean, you didn't go to film school. You you've never probably written a script before, have you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh,
actually,
yeah?
I was interested in film for a long time.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah. Back when I was in high school, I was part of the media elite crew.
The AV club? The AV nerds?
Kind of, yeah.
The elite AV. Yeah, yeah.
Elite media crew. And okay. It was a very elitist high school. And I was one of five people who were called out whenever the high school needed something filmed, either a sports game or a performance and or a play. And so I would film or edit or work in some other capacity with the school. I also filmed a game show at the high school. So I have a pretty strong background in this. I had written scripts before. And I had an interest in film. It's pretty obvious from the movie that, you know, I'm filming even as I'm arriving in Keene. I'm sort of like a soccer mom when it comes to pulling out the camera. Oh my God, something happened. Oh, the baby's crying. The baby's laughing. Let's pull out the camera. I am such a junkie for filming what's going on around me. I love this world. I'm so amazed by all the things that happen around me that I want to capture them forever. And especially even if they're awful things, you know, like the policewoman who grabbed my arm in Philadelphia and told me I wasn't able to walk down the street to my home where I live. It was insane. And so I needed to put all these on video. And so just talking about the process a little bit, it just started from me being like that soccer mom with a flip cam. And saying, I'm going to put all these videos on YouTube. You know, I like what those people in Keene are doing, resisting authority. I'm going to do some of that myself and put it online and see what happens. So doing some of that and then eventually having moved to Keene, the videos got more interesting after I got arrested several times. And then there were other angles, people supporting me, people having conversations with police. And then, I don't know, when things started to coalesce when it was decided that there would be a movie. I think that sort of happened after my final arrest, when I was plowed down by one of the officers with his cruiser, and then he stuck a baton in my spokes and nearly snapped my neck by sticking his shoulder onto my head and shoving it into the ground. I've seen a lot of police abuse videos, more than my fair share, and I am very fortunate that I came out of being plowed down by a police cruiser and being attacked and punched by a police officer who was on top of me, on top of my neck, and the only thing I walked away with were some scrapes and a minor concussion. That is very fortunate.
Yeah.
So after that, it was decided, I mean, the video was so good. I was in jail while this thing was going viral, and by now it's had almost a million hits on YouTube. Of course, it was put on a couple of different channels, so in total it's well over a million of the video of me getting taken down by this gruff, aggressive, and adrenaline-filled police officer.
Let me ask an interjection here. What do the cops feel about what you've done in Keene? Like, the lady who's on the cover of your DVD, does she know it?
I don't know her name. You know, the other one was the one who took me into the cruiser. That's Jen. I'll never forget her.
Jen, but, I'll never forget you, baby.
Yeah. She was nice. I mean, I tried to explain a little bit on the way to the cruiser. Like, I've been in the back of the cruiser a couple of times, you know. And when I'm in these situations, I, except for the dance party, I try and explain to the police officer, like, why I'm doing what I'm doing. I've been asked before while I'm in the back of the cruiser, like, why do you do this? And, you know, why don't you go to other countries? That's what one guy had said to me. He said, why don't you go to other countries? Mike Garecki, he was he's the one who arrested me for filming outside of the courthouse. You know, scandalous, real criminal activity to film outside of a courthouse. Chased me down, arrested me, and asked me, you know, why don't I go to other countries where there are real problems? And
someone asked that also at the Q&A. I noticed that, and I really liked you and Ian's answer. Basically, you know, because this is where I live and there are real problems here. They're not the real problems of, like, you know, people are being disappeared for free speech yet. But, you know, I think it's a pretty big problem that people, that cops are beating people up and throwing them in cages and stealing their homes for having a little bit of some substance. I think that's a problem. And I think it's a problem that, you know, they don't like to be filmed. I think everything you're addressing is a problem in our country.
Yeah, absolutely. There are problems. There's a problem of accountability in the courthouse. And so if there are greater degrees of problems with accountability across the world, well, then, okay, that's how it is. But I can't be everywhere, and I've got to solve the problems where I am. Yeah, of course, I moved to another part of, you know, the country to concentrate my efforts with others who think like I do. But, you know, I still do view any activism that I do in the U.S. as doing activism at home. You know,
I'm it's also inspiring people in other countries to do what they can. And I really think you have a better chance to reach and to be protected in your own town, you know?
Yeah, this is true. And also, if your boat is going down and you're on the upper deck and you're seeing water where you are, well, it's probably not the smartest thing to go to the very bottom where the hole is, your way down, and then try and push the water out from there. So just because there are places where the situation is worse doesn't mean that I should go where they are.
Yeah, if you want a no government paradise, move to Somalia or Detroit.
Yeah. I'm not interested in doing either of those things.
The police don't even show up in some neighborhoods in Detroit anymore. They're afraid to.
Yeah. So I just want to touch on this because I know we're going to run out of time.
Two minute warning.
Okay. Sing songs. For goodness sake, you know, there's a lot of grief and heartache in this world, and singing songs can be a wonderful way to lift people's spirits and share the message of liberty. There are some great liberty songs featured in my DVD, and you can take them right from the DVD if you put it into your computer. You can print out your own Shire Choir song sheets, the ones that we sang and were arrested for over at the Keene Courthouse. And also, if you don't have the movie, you can still find the entire song sheet for free at my blog, livefreeordance.com, under audio. You'll just see Songs of Liberty is a link listed there. So I just wanted to make sure that the people who are interested in singing songs for liberty are able to do that.
Derek J. is the modern Emma Goldman. If I can't sing, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
That's true. And yeah, singing is important to me. And right now, you know, since we're at the 2-minute warning, I want to mention that I'm working on a great podcast called Peace News Now. It's daily. It has a video accompanying it. And I'm working with a very talented video editor named Rachel Bassell, who has been terrific in animating my voice and in animating these stories, really bringing them to life and making them more accessible to the internet.
Excellent. And I really like what you're doing, all of it, and especially the new Peace News Now, because it's all good news. And there's so much bad news, so much tyranny today, that it's good to hear a liberty fix once in a while, or every day, or every week.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, I like to stay positive.
Well, thanks for coming on, Derek, and we'll have you back in a couple months to hear more about your process. I know we didn't get that deep into it, but it's probably enough to get people started if they want to do things. And thanks for coming on, man. It's been an honor having you on here. Thank you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Michael. Hope to be with you again soon.
Excellent.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.